Practice the Buddha's teachings, to understand exactly what he meant by enlightenment. Nowadays, the word enlightenment gets used for lots and lots of different things. But the Buddha was talking about something very specific when he talked about Nibbana or Nirvana. He explained that enlightenment means completely purifying the mind from unwholesome mental states. Not only from the mental states, but from the root causes for these unwholesome mental states. He said that it's possible to completely pull any thoughts of greed from the mind, completely pull up the root that blossoms into thoughts of greed, that it's possible to completely pull up the root of thoughts of anger and hatred, and that it's possible to completely pull up the root of thoughts of ignorance, thoughts of delusion. And that when we've done this, then we don't take rebirth in any destination. This is another one of the things that the Buddha saw on the night of his enlightenment, is that beings are born again and again because of these problems in the mind. That because of having craving, either for very gross material things, or even the very subtle craving just to exist. That because of this, when we pass away from this life, we have to be reborn in some other destination, either a good destination or a bad destination. And just like this, this birth is impermanent, so too are those other realms of rebirth. And most importantly, on the night of his enlightenment, he discovered the path to help us achieve this. Right? The Buddha was very special because he was able to discover these things on his own. This is why we call him a Buddha, and not just an ordinary enlightened being. Although it doesn't really sound right to say an ordinary enlightened being, but the Buddha is a very special kind of enlightened being because he discovers the path to enlightenment all on his own, without the help of a teacher. That through many, many rebirths, he develops wholesome qualities, wholesome bodily behavior, verbal behavior, mental behavior, and little by little develops this wisdom needed to discover this path. So this path has a name. It's called the Noble Eightfold Path. That there are eight aspects to it, and that by practicing these eight different trainings, little by little, the mind becomes calm and peaceful, the mind becomes concentrated, and we become wise. So these aspects of the Noble Eightfold Path are not things that we can only practice in an order, but that we practice all of them together, slowly developing. Right? Sometimes they develop slowly, sometimes they develop quickly, but for most of us, it's a very gradual, slow process. So the first factor of the Noble Eightfold Path is right view, a right understanding of the world. Specifically, a right understanding of karma and a right understanding of the situation of suffering in the world. Understanding that as long as we are reborn somewhere, we have to experience suffering. That being born is tied up with suffering, aging is tied up with suffering, dying, death is tied up with suffering, that when we have to be separated from our loved ones, We have to suffer when we have to associate with people that we don't like and people who don't like us. We have to suffer. When we want to live forever and we can't, we have to suffer. And when we don't want to get sick, but we do, we have to suffer. The Buddha saw this. He saw that this suffering has a root cause. So right view is understanding the Four Noble Truths, understanding what suffering is in the world, what the cause of suffering is. The Buddha saw that the cause of this suffering at its root is craving, wanting, this desire. At first, we can see the suffering caused by the desire for material things, that we have to work very hard to get sensual pleasures, to get nice food, to get nice clothing, to be surrounded by beautiful people. But that those people and things, they're impermanent. Eventually, we have to be separated from them. And when that happens, we have to suffer as long as we cling to them. So this is actually very good news, because when we see that there's a cause for this suffering in the world, then we know that there has to be a solution. Right? If there wasn't a cause, if it was just the way things were, inherently, forever, in all directions, then there wouldn't be anything that we can do. But the Buddha understood that there's a cause, and it's this craving that causes us suffering in this life, that causes us the suffering of having to be reborn again and again. And the last factor of right view is understanding this Noble Eightfold Path itself. The second factor of the Noble Eightfold Path is right intention. And the Buddha talked about three things. Right intention of renunciation, right intention of non-ill will, and right intention of non-harming. So that our mind is directed in a way that's not harmful to ourselves, that's not harmful to others, that we direct our mind in a way that's happy to give things up, working directly against that craving. Right? The Buddha saw that when we're completely consumed with desire for nice things, for nice physical things, right, that we're going to suffer, and that we want to start to point our mind in the direction of being happy giving up things. Right? Because when we do that, we start to see that happiness in the mind that's not caused by material things is a much more solid kind of happiness. That it's a happiness that doesn't go away so easily. When the mind is happy on its own without material comforts, then that happiness is much more secure. That we have to incline our minds to not being angry at people, not wishing for the harm of others, not trying to hurt people, to get even with them, to punish them, but that we train our mind in giving up these things. The third factor of the Noble Eightfold Path is right speech. That when we use our speech in a way that's harmful, then we collect bad karma. There'll be results that will be painful. He talked about right speech as being having four parts. Right speech is abstaining from telling lies. Right speech is abstaining from harsh speech, abstaining from divisive speech, using our words to break up friendships, and using our speech for useless things, for gossip, for frivolous things, talking about things that aren't important, that tie our minds to sensual pleasures. And the first of these is actually one of these five precepts, abstaining from telling lies. So we know that when we're keeping these precepts, when we're trying to direct the mind in this way, that we're actually following the Noble Eightfold Path, that we're actually following this very same path that the Buddha followed and completed, the very same path that others throughout the centuries have followed. That when our mind is dedicated to truthfulness, then little by little we're able to see the truth in the world. Right? We don't lie to ourselves, we don't lie to others. The fourth aspect of the Noble Eightfold Path is right action. So the Buddha described this as abstaining from killing, abstaining from stealing, and abstaining from sexual misconduct. Now all three of these are part of the five precepts that he encouraged his disciples to follow every single day. That when we have right view, understanding the suffering in the world, then we have right intention to give up harming others, and then this right speech and this right action become very easy. Right? When we've fully embraced this idea of karma and the good and bad results that come from our actions, when we've directed our mind in this wholesome way, then it becomes easier and easier to keep these precepts of abstaining from killing, stealing, committing sexual misconduct. Then the fifth factor is right livelihood, that we earn our living in a wholesome way, that we earn our living in a way that doesn't harm ourselves, doesn't harm others. If we're a monk or a nun, then we come about the necessities of life in a very innocent way. We don't try and scheme to get the things that we need. We just accept whatever's offered to us. If we're living the lay life, then we have an occupation that doesn't hurt other people. We can go to bed at night knowing that we've earned our living in a good way, that we haven't collected bad karma just in keeping ourselves and our families alive. The sixth factor is right effort. When the Buddha talked about effort, he was very, very specific in a way that's very easy for us to understand, very easy for us to practice. He said that we need to make effort to abandon the bad mental states, the bad habits that we have in the mind, the bad habits that we have in our body, that we have in our speech. So to abandon the unwholesome qualities that we have already. The second factor of right effort is to prevent bad habits from arising, prevent bad behavior from arising. The third is to develop good behavior, to develop good qualities in the mind. And the fourth is to perfect those good qualities that we have. So it's a complete package that keeps us safe in all directions, right? We have to clean house, right, before we decorate. No sense in bringing in, right, nice flowers to sit on the table if the table's covered with all kinds of trash and garbage, right? So we clean house. We look at our lives, we examine ourselves without being shy or ashamed, and look and see, you know, what are the bad habits that I have? Do I use my speech in a way that's harmful to others? Am I greedy for things? Do I make bad decisions because of the greed that I have? Right? Am I jealous of others? How can I give up these qualities? Right? Do I always put myself first, or do I think about the welfare of others? Right? The Buddha said that this power that we have to look at the mind and reflect on the mind itself is extremely powerful. It's something that most human beings never use. Right? Either they're shameless and don't care, or they're too caught up in worry that they're afraid to look and see, yes, you know, I have these bad qualities. Let me work on giving them up. And then to be careful not to pick up new bad habits, new bad qualities. Right? Because through associating with people and things that are harmful, we can pick up new bad qualities. Right? Somebody gets hired at work who's always very angry and talks in very cruel ways to people, and suddenly, at the end of the day, we realize that we've started to talk to others in the same way. Right? We weren't guarding ourselves to make sure that we didn't pick up new bad qualities. Then the third factor, to develop wholesome qualities, like we're doing today. Right? To work to train the mind. To work to have these habits that lead to happiness in the mind. To develop generosity. To develop thoughts of goodwill towards others. To develop thoughts of contentment. Being happy with what we have. Right? Not always longing for the newest, flashiest thing. Right? Developing this habit of being happy with little. Right? Having few wishes. To develop the habit of gratitude. Right? Recognizing all the ways that others have helped us. Right? All these are good qualities that the Buddha said that we develop in the mind. And this is what the Buddha means by right effort. That we develop these good qualities. And the good qualities that we already have, the Buddha said, we need to make effort to bring them to perfection, not to lose them. Right? Because just like we can pick up new bad qualities, we can lose the good qualities that we have, especially if we're not aware. Right? We may not realize that we tend not to get angry as much as other people. But because we don't value that habit in the mind, very easily we can lose it, right? If we don't recognize the fact that we practice generosity as often as we can and really see the value in that, then little by little our mind can change and we can lose that quality. So the Buddha said that we need to make effort in all four of these directions. Effort to develop, effort to purify the mind of negative qualities, to prevent new bad qualities from arising, to develop new good qualities, and to maintain and perfect the good habits that we do have in the mind. The seventh factor of the Noble Eightfold Path is called right mindfulness, sammasati. And in right mindfulness, the Buddha was talking very specifically about the mindfulness, the awareness that we have, the wisdom that we have towards the body, towards feelings that arise, towards states of mind, and towards the objects in the mind, mental objects. That for the most part, we never pay attention to these things as objects. When we look at the body, we may get attached to it. We may unwisely think that this body is ours, that we control it completely. We may have this desire for the body to last forever, to not get old. And as long as we carry along with those thoughts, what has to happen? We have to suffer, because it's not true. Right? The body isn't ours. We have to be separated from it someday. It's not going to last forever. And the more attachment that we have to the body, the more we have to suffer. But if we live mindfully, aware of the true nature of the body, then We don't suffer when we have to be separated from it. When we're mindful of feelings as they arise and pass away, knowing that feelings can be pleasant, feelings can be unpleasant, feelings can be neutral, right? Then our mind isn't tossed around by these feelings. Usually we're not paying attention to that. Usually we're paying attention to delicious, right? Or beautiful. We're not thinking, yes, I'm eating this delicious food, and a pleasant feeling is arising. This pleasant feeling, it's impermanent. It's going to change when the food is gone, it's swallowed, my mouth is washed, that pleasant feeling goes away. And all we're left with is a pleasant memory. And someday that memory will also go away. We're conscious of the various states of mind, knowing, is my mind contracted, is it expanded, is it peaceful, right? Is it depressed? What's the nature of the mind? Usually we're not aware of the thoughts that come and go in the mind. We're not aware of the craving and the clinging that we have to things. The Buddha said, this is right mindfulness. When we add this wisdom to the awareness of these things. And the last factor, he said, is right concentration. The Buddha was a master of concentrating the mind. And he spoke very specifically about deep states of meditation that we can achieve where the mind becomes more and more purified, more and more subtle. We all know that when we close our eyes and try and concentrate, that a variety of problems can happen. Right? Our mind can be restless, our mind can be sleepy, we can have desire for things that we want, we can even be overcome with thoughts of hatred. Right? We sit down very peacefully to meditate and we remember something that someone did to us, either recently or in the past. Or maybe even the person sitting next to us, right? That's the really interesting thing. We come together with the idea of sitting down and being happy together, but the person next to us, like they breathe really, really loud, right? All day long. So, right? And we just think, oh, I gave up my whole day to sit next to this person who's breathing so loud, right? It can happen. It totally happens, right? These problems happen in the mind when we try and meditate, right? We can have doubt, thinking, this mind can't be trained. It's ridiculous to think that someone could sit and just pay attention to the breath, right? All these problems come up in the mind. And the Buddha saw that as we reduce these problems in the mind, then the mind gets very bright. The mind experiences a happiness that's not connected with sensual pleasures. And step by step, the mind becomes more and more subtle, more and more peaceful. And even the rapture and happiness that come with this meditation, even those calm down and the mind becomes more and more concentrated. This is what the Buddha taught us as right concentration. And he said that all of these factors of the path are necessary. And we see that they're all things that we can practice, aren't they? We can all work to develop right view, to investigate, right, how suffering happens in our lives. We can all develop these intentions, right, of being content, intentions of giving up, intentions of not getting angry at people, not wanting to harm others. We can develop our speech, right? Every time we tell the truth and we don't tell a lie, we're practicing the Noble Eightfold Path. Every time we use our speech to unite people, not to divide people, we're practicing the Buddhist path to enlightenment. It's incredible, isn't it, that we have this chance every moment of the day to be training in these things. That We can train and live happily right now, not killing, not stealing, not committing sexual misconduct, knowing that we're happy now and that we're happy in the future as well. We can be happy knowing that we lead a life, that we make our money doing wholesome things, not harming others, and honestly. We can be happy knowing that we're practicing this right effort to abandon unwholesome and to develop what's wholesome. Knowing that we're practicing this mindfulness, we're starting to apply our wisdom to this body, not seeing it with ignorance, but seeing it with wisdom. Knowing that as we train to concentrate the mind, we're following this path that the Buddha laid down. So when the Buddha was alive, he established this order of monks and nuns, people who would dedicate their lives to practicing these teachings. And many folks would come and ask questions, take the opportunity to talk to the monks and nuns, maybe even come and talk to the Buddha himself. And so we have one of those situations that we'll learn about this morning in a discourse called Bhumija. So Bhumija is the name of a monk, a disciple of the Buddha. And he was living in Rajagaha. Rajagaha is one of the cities in northern India that the Buddha spent a lot of time. And a lot of his disciples lived there. So in the morning time, this venerable Bhumija went on his alms round and started to collect his food, and he went to the house of Prince Jayasingh and sat down there. He was invited for a meal there. And this Prince Jayasena, he was a very good person. He liked to visit monks. This isn't the only situation that we have with a conversation between him and a monk. And he was curious, but not really, hadn't really dedicated his life to practicing the teachings. So on this day, he asks this venerable monk, Bhumija. He says, "Master Bhumija, there are some recluses and Brahmins who make such assertions and hold such views as this. If one makes an aspiration and leads the holy life, one is unable to procure any fruit." So the holy life is a special word. In Pali, it's brahmacharya. And it has two meanings. It, in a very strict sense, it's referring to the celibate life. So in the Brahma world, the beings there don't have sexual intercourse, and so brahmacharya, the following of the Brahma life, literally, is what it means. But it's often used in general just to refer to spiritual practice, devoted spiritual practice. So the prince says to Bhumija, he says, some people make this assertion. They say that if you make an aspiration, you won't achieve anything in this spiritual life. He says, some people assert that if one makes no aspiration and one leads the holy life, one is still unable to procure any fruit. And then in the way of the times, the debating, the ways that people debated, he said, if one both makes an aspiration and makes no aspiration and one leads the holy life, one is still unable to procure any fruit. If one neither makes an aspiration nor makes no aspiration and one leads the holy life, one is still unable to procure any fruit. What does the Venerable Bhumija's teacher say here? What does he declare? So he's putting out this theory that if you make an aspiration and try to lead a spiritual life, it won't get you anywhere, right? That making an aspiration to achieve something is bad or negative. He says some people say that if you don't make an aspiration, then you won't achieve anything in your spiritual life. And then he says some people say if you make an aspiration and don't make an aspiration, right? Or if you don't make one, you neither make one nor don't make one, right? That you can't achieve anything. And so the Venerable Bhumija has to think about it. Right? So he says, I've not heard and learned from the Blessed One's own lips. So he says, I haven't heard this from the Buddha. But it's possible that the Blessed One might say this. If one makes an aspiration and one leads the holy life unwisely, one is unable to procure any fruit. So if you make an aspiration, but you don't practice correctly, you won't achieve anything. If one makes no aspiration and one leads the holy life unwisely, one is still unable to procure any fruit. If one both makes an aspiration and makes no aspiration, and one leads the holy life unwisely, one is still unable to procure any fruit. If one neither makes an aspiration nor makes no aspiration, and one leads the holy life unwisely, one is still unable to procure any fruit. So he's saying, aspiration, no aspiration. If you lead your life unwisely, if your spiritual practice isn't wise, isn't done correctly, then you won't achieve anything. There won't be good results. But then he says, however, if you make an aspiration and you lead the spiritual life wisely, then it could be that you achieve some results, some fruit. And he goes through all the other possibilities, right? If you don't make an aspiration, but you lead your spiritual life wisely, then you will achieve something. And so he says, I've not heard and learned this from the Buddha's own lips, Prince, but it's possible that the Blessed One would answer as I've stated. So he's very honest. He says, I haven't exactly heard the Buddha talk about this, but here's what I think he would say. And the prince was very happy hearing this. He said, if Master Bhumija's teacher speaks thus, if he declares thus, then it certainly seems that the Venerable Bhumija's teacher stands ahead of all the ordinary recluses and Brahmins. So he thinks that this sounds really good, that it's not so much about the aspiration that you make, but exactly how you lead your spiritual life, exactly what it is that you're doing that matters. And so, after the meal, this Bhumija went to see the Buddha. Right? He was very fortunate that the Buddha was living close by, and so he knows that he's just tried to speak on behalf of the Buddha, and right away he wants to check in and see, right? Did he say what was correct, or did he misrepresent the Buddha? So he explains exactly what happened, and the Buddha says this to him. Surely, Bhumija, when you were asked such a question and answered thus, you said what has been said by me and did not misrepresent me with what is contrary to fact. You explained in accordance with the Dhamma, his teachings, in such a way that nothing which provides grounds for censure can be legitimately deduced from your assertion. So he says, you said exactly what I said. There's no way that someone could twist around what you said. You spoke the Dhamma. You gave my teaching. Then the Buddha goes on to explain a little bit more. The Buddha says, Whatever recluses and Brahmins have wrong view, wrong intention, wrong speech, wrong action, wrong livelihood, wrong effort, wrong mindfulness, and wrong concentration. If they make an aspiration and they lead the holy life, they will be unable to procure any fruit. If they make no aspiration and they lead the holy life, they are still unable to procure any fruit. So the Buddha says, if people are practicing and they have the opposite qualities of my teaching, instead of having right view, they have wrong view. They don't believe in karma. They don't believe in the results of actions. They don't believe that there's a cause for suffering in the world and that it's possible to put an end to suffering. They have wrong intentions. They have greed for sensual pleasures. They wish harm for others. They have wrong speech, wrong action. They come about their livelihood in a wrong way. All these things. They're making wrong effort. He says, those people, if they make an aspiration, a determination, or if they don't, they're not going to achieve anything. Right? It doesn't matter about this aspiration. It matters about following the path, about doing good things. And so then he says, why is that? Because that wrong path is not a proper method for procuring fruit. He says it's not the right way to go about things. And then he gives us a set of very beautiful similes. He says, suppose a man needing oil, seeking oil, wandering in search of oil, were to heap up gravel in a tub, sprinkle it all over with water, and press it. Okay? So he wants to make oil, sesame oil. And so he takes little tiny rocks, and he puts them in a press, and he starts squeezing. Is he going to get oil that way? The Buddha says, then if he made an aspiration and acted thus, he would be unable to procure any oil. Right? So he says, okay, I'm going to get oil from these rocks. I definitely want to make oil. No matter how hard he presses, he's not going to get that. If he doesn't make that determination, if he doesn't make that aspiration, still not going to get the oil. The Buddha says, why is that? Because it's a wrong method. That's not how you get oil. You can press and press and press, and you're not going to get what you want. We can have this determination to have happiness. But if we keep doing the things that cause suffering, we'll never get happiness. If we meditate in a way that doesn't help us develop concentration, that doesn't help us develop wisdom, right? We can sit on that cushion for years, pressing and pressing. No oil comes out, no fruit from those actions. The Buddha says, suppose a man needing milk, seeking milk, wandering in search of milk, were to pull a recently calved cow by her horn. Okay? So, here's the situation. You can only get milk from a cow that's had a baby. Right? That's how it works for city people. You can't just go up to any old cow and get milk. But this person, he's found the right cow. She had given birth. But what does he do? Pulls on the horn. Right? He's right there in the presence of the cow that he wants. But he pulls the horn. The Buddha says, is he going to get any milk by pulling that horn? No matter how hard he pulls? No. Right? Why is that? Because it's the wrong method. It's not how it happens. How many times, right, do we come in contact with the teachings? Right? The Dhamma is right there in front of us. The opportunity to practice well. But we're pulling the horn. Right? We're not doing what we need to do. We're not listening in the way that we need to listen. We're not developing the energy to do the right things. Maybe we get We get arrogant because of our learning, right? That's something that happens to a lot of people. They study the Dhamma in detail, and they use it to make arguments with people. Right? They're right there in the front, in the presence of these excellent teachings, these ancient teachings, but instead of practicing them, they argue with other people. They try and prove their intelligence. Right? They're just pulling on that horn. They don't get the benefit. He says, suppose a man needing butter, seeking butter, wandering in search of butter, were to pour water into a churn and churn it with a churning stick. Right? Again, city folks may not realize this, but you take milk or curds in this case, and you stir it up again and again and again, and eventually the fat separates out and you get butter. You pour water into the churn, you can have a perfect churn, the best churn in the world. Right? You can stir it around for the rest of your life, but do we get butter? No. If we say, I'm going to make butter, I'm not going to stop until I get the butter, right? Are we going to get butter? No. Because it's not the right method. We need to be practicing right effort. We need to be working to do the correct things. If we think that just by working harder we're going to get further along, we do have to work hard. No doubt about that. The Buddha said this path isn't easy. But if we're not working in the right direction, if we're not working correctly, if we're not making the effort to develop the right qualities, if we're not developing our wisdom, then no matter how hard we think we're working on this spiritual path, we're not going to get what we want. The Buddha says, suppose a man needing fire, seeking fire, wandering in search of fire, were to take an upper fire stick and rub a wet, sappy piece of wood with it. So again, I think many people have seen at least pictures of this where you take a piece of wood and then a straight stick and you spin it around, and eventually the friction causes little embers to start. I think I've actually never done it, but it starts heating it up, and embers start to light and little sparks, and then you can start a fire. Right? But this person who wants to have a fire, who needs heat, the upper stick is okay, but the stick that they spin into, it's wet, it's green, right? Full of water. If he makes a determination, is he going to get fire? He could spin that again and again. He could get blisters on his hands from spinning, but he's not using the right method. In other places, the Buddha gives a very beautiful simile of this same technique of trying to start fire. And in that other simile, he says, trying to start a fire with a wet, sappy piece of wood that's lying in the water is like trying to develop wisdom in a mind that's completely saturated with sensual pleasures, with desire for sensual pleasures. Right? It's not prepared properly. Even you take a wet, sappy piece of wood out of the water, if it's still wet and sappy, if it still has desire for those sensual pleasures, very hard to light the sparks of wisdom. So the Buddha says, yes, whether he is determined or not, he's not going to get that fire. Then the Buddha says, whatever recluses and Brahmins have right view, right intention, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration, if they make an aspiration and they lead the holy life, they are able to procure fruit. If they make no aspiration and they lead the holy life, they are still able to procure fruit. If they both make an aspiration and make no aspiration, if they neither make an aspiration nor make no aspiration, and they lead the holy life, they are still able to procure fruit. Why is that? Because that right path is a proper method for procuring fruit. And then he gives the opposite situation for each of these similes. He says, if somebody needs oil and they take sesame seeds, put them in a press, sprinkle them with a little bit of water, and then squeeze that press. He says, if they make this wish, oh, I really want to have oil come out, oil will come out. Even if they don't, right? Someone just hands them these things and that person squeezes, even if they have no idea what they're doing, right? Still, oil is going to come out. Right? Maybe we don't understand at all what the Buddha means by enlightenment. But yet, we practice these things. We practice right view. We practice right speech, right action, right intention. We're going to get happiness. We're going to get good results. Right? It's the power of these correct actions. He says, suppose someone needs milk, and they go to that cow who's recently given birth, and they pull on the udder. No matter what they know about the cow, no matter what intention they have, they're going to get milk. Because that's where the milk is. That's the right way to do it. That as long as we have this path of practice, if we're following this path of practice, then we know that we're going to get happiness. Happiness here and now, happiness in future lives, and one day the happiness of completely putting an end to suffering. He says, suppose someone needs butter, and they put milk or curds in a churn, and they stir that stick around. Whether they want to or not, that butter is going to happen. Right? Even used to be, if you went to the store and you bought whole milk, and you had a bumpy ride home, right? You could even start to get butter in the jar, right? Without even wanting butter, right? Why? Because you have the right ingredients and you have the right action, right? It gets stirred around and butter starts to accumulate. Same way, the power of this path is so strong that if we're following it, we're going to get results. And the Buddha said, we never get painful results from following these things. And finally, the Buddha says, suppose someone takes a fire stick and they take another piece of wood that's dry, right? No sap in it, and they spin it trying to make fire, they're going to get that fire because all the factors are correct. They're making the right effort, they have the right equipment, the right ingredients, so they're going to get good results. If they want to or not, that fire is going to start. Right? Even fire starts accidentally sometimes from things rubbing together. Because that's the power of that action, that it's correct. Whether there's intention, whether there's a wish or not, still, we get that result. And so then the Buddha says to this monk, Bhumiji, he says, if these four similes had occurred to you with reference to Prince Jayasena, he would have spontaneously acquired confidence in you, and being confident would have shown his confidence to you. So the Buddha says, if you would have been able to give him these four similes, he would have seen exactly right away, and he would have placed confidence in you, in your teaching. And the Venerable Bhumija says, Venerable Sir, these are new similes. These are beautiful things that you've created right here on the spot. Right? I couldn't have given these things to him. Right? Bhumija recognizes the Buddha as his teacher. Right? Saying, you're the one that can teach this Dhamma so clearly. And so when the Venerable Bhumija heard all this, his mind was very happy. He knew that the Buddha's Dhamma is proclaimed in a very, very clear way. Right? So that even someone who's heard the Dhamma can infer what the proper answer might be to a question that a sincere person asks. So this morning we've had the chance to learn in great detail this very rare teaching of the Four Noble Truths and the Noble Eightfold Path. We've seen how, even as we sit here right now, we're practicing these things. We've seen that without practicing these things, no matter how hard we work, if we're using a wrong method, we're not going to get results. But if we have the right method, if we follow the path correctly, then we don't need to worry about getting results. We have confidence that only good results are going to come from the things that we do. So, having heard these teachings of the Buddha, having reflected on them wisely, may we always keep these teachings in mind. May we always be disciples who practice these teachings, who have the right method, who follow this method all the way to true happiness, through the power of this listening, through the power of this reflection, through the power of following these teachings. May we too one day experience for ourselves the supreme bliss of Nibbana in this Gautama Buddha's dispensation. Sarva.